Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 a.m. at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. We invite you to check our website out at gostonebridge.com and follow us on Twitter, where our handle is at SB Church, and give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/gostonebridge. This week, Pastor Steve Bradley teaches from our new series, Character Tour. Here's Pastor Steve.
Good morning. We started this series last week called Character Tour, and so we're going to look at some of the characters in the Bible, especially we're going to go back to the Old Testament, but maybe you remember when you were younger going on a vacation. Anybody remember those types of things? I mean, they were always the most fun, right? Some people say no, not exactly, but I always look forward to school being out and then the adventures that we would go on, because those were the times that you felt like, you know, you didn't have to learn anything, didn't have to study, you could leave all the books and all that behind. But as I look back in life, one of the things I recognize is it was during those times, many times it was during those adventures or those vacations, that I really learned a lot, because it was during those times that you took the things that you learned in school and you actually put those things into practice, and you sort of figured out that life never ends, is meaning you constantly learn. You're constantly thinking. School, in one sense, I know this is going to sound bad to a lot of kids, school is never out. Sorry, you know. In fact, it's a mistake not to think that way and not to continue to learn and not to continue to apply those things, because God has plans for us that we're always learning and always. In fact, this is one of the things I think that people make a mistake in. They think about learning and they think about knowledge and things like that as only something that happens in the classroom. And there's a classroom of life where you learn so much more than you would, you know, necessarily in just an academic setting. I know for some people in academia, they won't like hearing that, but that's just the reality of it. That was something that came about later. It's why you probably heard before, maybe from your grandfather or your uncle, maybe your dad even said this when you said, "Where'd you go to school?" And he said, "I grew up in the school of..." Yeah, that's exactly, hard knocks. That meant, you know, I had to learn it as I went. In real life, actually how it worked, and that's a good thing, because we all have to learn it that way. In the Old Testament, there's a guy, and especially when we talk about adventures, named Abraham. And I think when you look at Abraham's life, I mean, Abraham was an adventure. But there were a lot of things that Abraham had to prepare for the adventures of his life. And God took Abraham through a lot of things to prepare. Remember Abraham's life? Abraham is a guy, this is after Noah's Ark and all that, and the fall of mankind and all those things have gone on. And Abraham is the father, considered the father of faith, or the father of what would be the Jewish nation, because God calls Abraham to leave his homeland, leave his family, pack up, and go to this new land. And he lived in what would be modern-day Iraq or Iran, over in that territory. He packs up and he leaves. Abraham would have been from a culture and a family that worshipped many gods and many idols, but he's called to follow this one God who created all of creation and created Abraham, had plans for him. He picks up and he leaves, and it says he doesn't even know where he's going. It's just, trust me, believe me, follow me. And for Abraham, life is going to become a series of tests. In fact, I put this in your outline. Life is a test. I think it'll pop up there. Is it going to pop up on the screen right behind me? Is it going to pop up on there? There it goes. Okay. Just want to make sure it was. Life is a test. And Abraham is about to face the most difficult or the most important test of his life. Now, if you remember, Abraham had no children, Abraham and Sarah, and God gave him all these promises about how he's going to build him into a mighty nation, and how Abraham was going to have kids, you know, more than he could count. And Abraham is like, "That's really great, but we don't have any children." And if you remember, Abraham and Sarah kind of figure out how they're going to do it on their own, and Abraham takes Sarah's handmaid, has a child by Sarah's handmaid. God says, "That's not the way it works. These are my plans. These are things I'm leading you into. You don't have to fix it or figure it out. And Abraham finally has a son. He is called the child of promise. And it's a picture that we live by our faith that God will fulfill his promises. And that son, you remember Abraham and Sarah's son, the child of promise, his name was what? Isaac. Good. Okay, you know who Isaac is. And Isaac is born when Abraham's, anybody remember Abraham is how old? He's 100 years old. I mean, and I love to say this, Sarah was 90. You know, this is one of those things like, you know, Sarah's been waiting her whole life, finally have a child. And I know I say this to be funny, and at 90 years old, she's probably going like, what was I thinking? You know, this is not a blessing. I'm 90 years old. Who's going to take care of this little boy and all too? But, you know, Isaac is a blessing. Man, they are so excited. This is the greatest gift that they could ever receive. In fact, Abraham, in his older age, would certainly have said, if he were here, you know, it's not my wealth. It's not anything to do with position. It's not anything to do with things that I own. The greatest blessing of my life, by far, is Isaac, my son. Isaac is my future. My possessions aren't my future. Isaac is the hope of what is ahead. My position has nothing to do with that. It's my son. This is life that I can pour myself into and that will move on after me, and the promises that God has made will be fulfilled generation after generation. So this is exactly the way Isaac was viewed by Abraham. And at this point, Isaac is a young man, so we're guessing that Abraham must be, I don't know, 115 years old at this time. So he's up there in age, and here's the greatest gift that he's been given, and he's going to be asked to do something with this gift. This is life as a test. Look at these verses. This is what it says in Genesis chapter number 22. It comes after God's greatest blessing. After this, God tested Abraham. God said, Abraham, yes, answered Abraham, I'm listening, and look at what it says in the next verse, verse 2. He said, take your dear son Isaac, whom you, what? That's an understatement. Whom you absolutely adore, who is the greatest thing that you have ever been given in your life, who you would do anything for, and go to the land of Moriah. Now, I want you to kind of hang on to that word for just one second. We'll come back to it near the end. The land of Moriah. Sacrifice him there. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I will point out to you. So what he's asking Abraham to do is to give up his son. God gave him Isaac. Now, he loves Isaac more than anything else, and God is saying, here's the test. Do you understand, do you believe that I gave you Isaac, and here's the test, give Isaac back to me. They understood burnt offerings. They understood sacrifices. He knew exactly what this would mean. Give Isaac back to me. Let me read for you. This is from the commentary, the Bible Knowledge Commentary by two guys named Wolford and Zook. Here's what they say on this verse. This is better than I could say it. The greatest test in the life of Abraham, God tested him, playing off this verse, came after he received the promised seed, that was Isaac, following a long wait. The test was very real. He was to give Isaac back to God. As a test, it was designed to prove Abraham's faith. And for it to be a real test, it had to defy logic. It had to be something Abraham wanted to resist. Can you imagine how much he wanted to resist this? How much Abraham would say, God, ask anything of me, but not this. Don't ask me to give up Isaac. In fact, it would defy logic for Abraham, because Abraham would say, if this is a child of promise, God, if this is the fulfillment of all the things that you've promised about the future, it doesn't even make sense to me how in the world, if giving him up or sacrificing him would make this work. Now, everybody follow me there? You think the same way? Everybody think the same way? Except for one thing. Where did the gift come from? Who is the one that caused the gift to happen in the first place? When God gave Isaac, was that a defying of logic? Of course it was. It defied all logic. They were past childbearing years. That's the whole point. This relationship was going to be built on a trust that God would fulfill his promises, that if God said something, God was the one that had the ability, the power, and the will to cause it to happen, not Abraham. And the test for Abraham's life, same way God, life is a test for you and a test for me. Do you believe and do you trust God to do what he says that he will do? It's the ultimate test, the most difficult test that you and I face, Abraham faced. Do you trust God to do what he said he would do? Look at the next verse, verse number 3. It says, Abraham got up early in the morning. So, you know, Abraham's going to prepare. I mean, he knows it's going to be a long journey, and he knows it's very important. Abraham is not resisting. He's not falling back. He got up early in the morning. He saddled his donkey. He took two of his young servants to go with him and his son Isaac. He had split wood for the burnt offering. He set out for the place that God had directed him. All Abraham knew was, here's where you're going to go. I'm going to show you the mountain, same way that when he showed him the land, and I want you to take Isaac. We're going to go there. The sacrifice is going to be made. Look at the next verse, verse number four, or the point will pop up first, and here's the real question. How far would Abraham be willing to go trusting God, putting his hope and his faith, trusting God? That's the test. That will be the question for him. Look at the next verse. It says, on the third day, he looked up and saw the place in the distance. Now, I want you to hang on to these words again, because in the Old Testament, just like in the New Testament, there are these word plays for you to catch and for you to understand. When it says that he looked up, it means that he saw something that he had never seen before. He knew he was going to a place, and he knew the place was far off, 3 days' journey. He is headed in this direction, and now it says all of a sudden, it's a wordplay. He looks up, and he sees the place that God says, I'm going to take you to. And I want you to hang on to those words again. Very important. Most translations will use that language. Some will interpret it a little bit different, but those are the words in the Hebrew that are there, clearly there, that he sees this in the distance. Next verse, it says, number 5, Abraham told his two young servants, stay here with the donkey. The boy and I are going over there to worship, and we'll come back to you. I think it's interesting that he says, we're going over there to worship. You know what worship is? A lot of people don't understand worship, and for a lot of us, it's a weakness in our life. It's a weakness in our relationship with God. Worship is looking to God and realizing God is all-powerful, and compared to God, I'm nothing. What I have is nothing. Worship may involve you falling on your face before God and saying, God, everything I have comes from you. It belongs to you. I know that when we worship together, and it's real important that we worship together, most of us don't fall on our face. Well, not intentionally. We might accidentally trip over, you know, the chair or something, you know. But that's exactly what it is. When it says that Abraham would go and worship, it would mean, in fact, that you should worship privately. That means you should find a place in your prayer time to go away and say, God, it's all about you. You did everything. You made everything. I love to go out, as I've told you before, I go out early in the morning, sometimes in the dark, and walk, and I pray. And most of the time, that's exactly where I start out. I'm just looking around, I'm going like, wow. Because this stuff's beyond me. I mean, I just look at creation and the world and say, could I have dreamed it up? You know, is it something that I could have made happen? No way, you know. I mean, sometimes I think I could, right, you know, but there's no way. It's sort of like the preacher who went and visited the farmer one day. We get mixed up. And he went out with the farmer, and he looked over the fields. They stood up on a hill and saw all these fields, the wheat and everything. I mean, it's beautiful. You know how the wind blows and it moves. You've seen those? And you're just like, oh, man, this is just amazing. And the preacher says to the farmer, he says, isn't it incredible? Isn't it incredible what God has done? And the farmer's a little indignant. He says, well, you should have seen it before, you know, I got it, right? Because he means, yeah, all that, I did all that. And the preacher's like, actually, you didn't, you know. Actually, you didn't. Because if God had not given you the opportunity, not created the land, created the plant, you know, that you couldn't make this happen. That's our lives. We do things with our lives. We should do things with our lives. It is all about doing something. Abraham's story is going to be about doing something. Abraham is not known because he didn't do anything. Abraham's not known because he just had some knowledge or understanding. Abraham's known because he took his knowledge and understanding and what? He acted upon it. He did something that was absolutely incredible. Abraham trusted God in a way that we would look at it and say, I'm not sure I could do that. I'm not sure I would have the faith or the strength to do what Abraham did. Abraham's very intentional. He goes to this place, this mount in Moriah, and he goes to this place and he's going to worship God there. He knows the sacrifice is coming, but he's going to go and say, God, it's all about you. Isaac was a gift from you. I could never have figured it out. I tried to figure it out. I tried to do it my way. Didn't work out very well, but you gave the gift anyway. Okay, here we go. Next verse. Sorry, mini sermon. Here we go. Next verse, it says, Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering. He gave it to Isaac, his son, to carry because they're going by themselves now. He carried the flint and the knife. The two of them went off together. Real important. They go off together. And the next verse says, Isaac said to Abraham, his father, Father, this is what a young boy would do, right? Hey, Dad, let me ask you this one question. Yes, my son, we have a flint, we have the fire, we have wood, but where is the, what? Where's the animal? Where's the sheep? Where's the, because, you know, I understand all this. I know what we're going to do because Isaac had certainly seen his father worship before. He'd certainly been taught all the stories from Abraham about how God had led him and how faithful God had been. So Isaac understood making this offering to God. They would take from the best that they had, and they would suffer loss. They would give the best that they had as an offering back to God to acknowledge that everything that they had came from God. All the blessings in their life came from God. Abraham would say, all of my prosperity has come from God. Hard work, doing something, absolutely. It's still a gift that has come from God. And he would have taught his son to acknowledge it. So Isaac is doing the natural thing. He says, okay, I got it. I understand. But there's one thing that's a little strange here, Dad. Where's the offering? Where's the sheep? Where's the ram? And I love this because I think in this next verse, you're going to see this in Abraham's answer. You're going to see that Abraham answers in the only way that Abraham knows how to answer. I think that pops up there. The only answer that Abraham knew how to give. Because Abraham didn't know what to say about where the sheep or the lamb was, just like he didn't know what to say about how Isaac would be born, or he didn't know how to say in so many things that God had done in his life. So he says the only thing he knows to say, here it is. He says back to his son, son, God will, and here's that word again, what is it? God will see to it that there's a sheep for burnt offering, and they kept on walking together, kept going to that place. The reason I put that word see in again is because most of your translations will say, he said that God will provide. But in the Hebrew, it is actually the word God sees. It's a word we get Jireh from it. So you'll hear the phrase Jehovah Jireh, and we'll say the God who provides, but it's actually the God who sees. It means he sees what you don't see. You don't know how he's going to provide, but God sees, and it absolutely plays into the phrase, God sees to it. He causes it to happen, and then you get a chance to see how God fulfills and how God does this. So this is all about Abraham learning to what? See, right? To see how God provides, to see how God fulfills, how God gives promises that you and I are supposed to grab hold of, you know, build our life around, believe God and trust God. That's our faith, knowing that God sees what we do not see. And so he says, God sees, we're moving on to the place. And together, they continue to go on to the place. Okay, so here's the next half of this, which I love, because this is where Abraham really passes his test. Look at the next verse. It says, they arrived at the place, this is where God had told them to go, to which God had directed him. Abraham built an altar there. The altar was all intended to be the place of sacrifice and the place of worship to God. He laid out the wood, and then it says, then he tied up Isaac. and he laid him on the wood. Abraham reached out and took the knife to kill his son. And then the next verse says, just then the angel of God called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Abraham says, I'm listening. Now, listen, let me give you the literal translation in the Hebrew. I know that's how it comes across because that's how we understand. The literal translation, the Hebrew, if you read it, says, Abraham said, I was hoping you'd say something, God. I was hoping that it wouldn't end right here. Thank you for actually making a noise, because, man, I was just, you know, kind of like at the last moment and a loss, and I didn't know exactly what to say, but it's real difficult to translate all that. So they just put, yes, I'm here, right? Could you relate to the literal translation? No, it's my literal translation. Of course you could. Abraham is dying inside when he naturally tries to figure it out. When he naturally tries to say, what's the end to this? Where's this gonna finish? It doesn't make sense. Everything in Abraham's life and his body, because of what he loves, has got to be fighting against this. But Abraham, because he's gone through so many things before, has learned to believe God sees what I don't see. I don't understand. I don't know how it's going to work out. But God sees what I don't see. Does that make sense? It's why you go through adventures in life. It's why you go through journeys in life. This is why life is a test. Because God is trying to test you, trying to teach you so that your faith is proven to you that that's the way it is, and I need to believe that and hang on to that, because this is what will get me through. If this is not true, if God is not the one who fulfills his promises, if God is not faithful to the words that he gives, if he is not, then we have believed in vain. We are fools. We've come up with something that we shouldn't be putting our hope in. And if we believe this, listen, if we believe this, then as difficult as it is to go through life and adventures to actually act upon that, that's the only thing that would make sense if we believe who God is and what God has done. See, we look at this because I do. I've heard this story before. And I look at it saying, you know, okay, you know, it's sort of like, because it's an ancient story, it's sort of like a fairy tale or something like that. We don't really think about it. This is not a fairy tale. This is real life. This is a man, most archaeologists say, 4,000 years ago, who lived 4,000 years ago, facing the very real possibility that the greatest gift he has ever been given, the most important thing in his life, he is about to end with his own hand. And if it's not true, if God is not real, if God's promises aren't true, if God is not the one who fulfills his own promises, then he's about to do the most foolish thing that any person could ever do. Abraham is 115 years old. Abraham has gone through promise after promise after promise. Abraham has failed and failed and failed many times in the test of life getting to this point. He has gone through so many things and learned to listen to God and learned, you know, how faithful God is to get him to this point. That is the way it will work with you. God will not do this to you to start out. God builds faith. He teaches the same way you would do it with your child, right? My parents, you know, they would take us on trips and adventures and vacations in order to teach us things. Did they expect us to act mature and to know and to figure things out when we started journeys as young? Of course not. But each step of the way was another test, another lesson, another thing to be learned, another thing to be understood. When I was little, I still remember my dad had a 61, I think it was a 61, Chevy Corvair. Anybody remember a Corvair? Ralph Nader put him out of business. But the great car, my dad never forgave Ralph Nader, just let you know. It was a great car. It had the trunk in the front. It was blue. It had a bench seat in the front, half of it folded down on each side, just the back, so you could get into the back. And the back seat, the whole back folded down into a flat kind of hard table. I don't know exactly the point of that. And the engine was in the back. It was a Pancake 6, air-cooled, just like a VW would be. Chevy made this car. It was a great car. So we're going to Daytona, Florida. With three kids. I had an older brother and a younger sister. My mom, my dad, three kids, and my Aunt Libba are piling into that car, right? And bless her heart, Aunt Libba had to sit in the back with three kids, and mom and dad were in the front seat, and we folded the bench down to drive from South Carolina down to Daytona, Florida, because it was cool, right? But we're on a hard piece of wood or something for this incredible trip. And I look back, and I learned from those times. I learned I never want to go to Florida in a 60 Corvair again. I mean, that was the most pain. No. You learn through those things. They're not all perfect. You'll learn lessons, and your parents take you through these things to learn lessons. God does the same thing. That's why God is described as a father who is taking you and I through the lessons of life. And you're learning the greatest test of all is to learn to trust God. Life is this test to learn. Will you learn through life that God is faithful because he is? That God always fulfills his promises because he does, and God will always be faithful to the things that he is calling you to, even though you don't see them, because he does see them. He knows exactly what he's talking about. You just haven't figured it out yet. You haven't caught it yet. You don't see, understand, but the day will come, you will see. He will show you that he is faithful and that you should listen and follow his leading. Okay, so here we go. Next verse. He says, I'm listening. And the angel says, don't you lay a hand on that boy. Don't touch him. Now I know, and I love this. This is out of the Message. This is Eugene Peterson's paraphrase. The reason I put this up here is all because of this one verse. I used his paraphrase to say, I love this because he says, now I know that you fear God. And a lot of times people don't understand what that means. What do you mean fear? So God's going to hurt you? It's not what he's talking about. He's talking about you have this respect for God, and you understand, as the writer of Proverbs understands, that is this fear of God for who he is, the respect that he does whatever he wants to. That's the beginning of real wisdom, he says, of real knowledge in your life. You build it upon that. And so Peterson does a great job with this paraphrase. He says, for now I know how fearlessly you fear God, or I would say how fearlessly you trust God, you believe God. That's a great understanding. Now I know, Abraham, how fearlessly, you're not afraid of anything else in comparison to your fear or your respect or your understanding of who God is. You didn't hesitate to place your son, your dear son, the one you love more than anything else, the one you would do anything for. You didn't hesitate to place him on the altar. Next verse says, Abraham, that word comes up again. Abraham what? He looks up. He saw something. Abraham sees what he never saw before. And I'm going to ask you this question when I read it. He saw a ram caught by its horns in the thicket. Let me ask you a question. You think that ram was there before? You think that God just at that moment miraculously caused the ram to just appear caught in the thicket? Or do you think the ram might have been there in the thicket before, caught in the thicket, and Abraham just did not what? He just didn't see. Because if I'm Abraham, let me tell you, I wouldn't have seen it. I don't know what the answer to the question is. But the point is all of a sudden he sees what he did not see before. All he can see right now is, I'm about to lose my son. The thing I put all my hopes and dreams in. And all of a sudden, when his hand is stayed, when the angel says, stop, don't you do it, don't touch that your son, all of a sudden now he sees. There's the ram. There's the answer to Isaac's question. That I didn't bring the ram. I didn't bring the sheep. Who brought the ram and the sheep? Abraham would say, God did. In fact, God had planned all along that this would be the sacrifice. He just wanted to know if I trust him, I believe him. He says, Abraham took the ram. He sacrificed it as a burnt offering. I love this. In the place of his son. This is really key. I'm going to show you why you need to understand this and why you will see this theme all the way from Genesis in the Old Testament all the way to Revelation. But let me finish this passage. A few more verses here. Next verse says, it will pop up there. Abraham named the place God Yireh, or God sees it. We would say Jehovah Jireh, and it means God sees, God provides. And so he names his place after that. He said that's where we get the saying, on the mountain of God, he sees it, or he sees to it, or he will provide. Next verse, number 15 says, the angel of God spoke from heaven a second time to Abraham, and this is what he says. I love this speech. Look at this. I swear, God's sure word, you can trust this. If God says it, you know it's going to happen. I swear, God's sure word, because you have gone through with this and have not refused to give me your son, your dear, dear son. Next verse, I'll bless you. Oh, how I'll bless you. And I'll make sure that your children flourish. This is something that Abraham would not see, but if he could hang around long enough, he would see, like stars in the sky, like sand on the beaches. And then the final verse, he says, and your descendants will defeat their enemies. All nations on earth will find themselves blessed through your descendants. Catch this. Why? One reason. Why? Because what? You obeyed me. Because you trusted me. Because you believed that I see what you don't see, and so you will trust what I see rather than what you see. Because of that, he says, all of these things will happen. Two things real quickly. First one is, the reason I mentioned Moriah, and I want you to hold on to Moriah. Abraham is in Beersheba. At this time, he travels 50 miles north. We actually know the geography of it. Archaeologists will tell you exactly and find the place. And he goes up to the Mount of Moriah is where he goes. And almost all archaeologists will tell you the Mount of Moriah is now called the Temple Mount. It's in a city called Jerusalem. It's called the Temple Mount. And that's where he goes to sacrifice Isaac. That's where the statements about, you know, here's the ram to be sacrificed instead of, in place of your son. This is where this relationship is affirmed and the promise of God is actually affirmed. There in Jerusalem, there in the place where Jesus himself was crucified. He was crucified outside of Jerusalem, but that's where he's put on trial. That's where he goes. This is the center of worship. You know, it's interesting. I was listening to something on CNN, and they said, it's kind of funny. It's the center of worship, not just for the Jewish nation. It's not just the center of worship for Christianity. He says, in general, it's the center of worship for the entire planet. That's what a secular, the guys doing it, were not believers, said. This is what is undeniable. Everything historically seems to continue to revolve around this one place. Why? Okay, I'll just leave you with that. Why? Pretty incredible, isn't it? Second thing is this. How do you pass the test? How do you pass the big test that God gives you, that God will lead you to? You pass them by going through the small test, by allowing God to teach you step by step, by God saying, I will point you in the direction that I want you to go. And I know that you think about that as, you know, as far as location geographically, but it means something to Abraham. Abraham would say, pointing you to the direction you need to go would mean believe this, trust this, act upon this rather than how you would see it and you would understand it, looking out for your own interests, believe and trust God, that God has a better way. And God will take you step by step by step toward the big test in your life. He won't just throw the big test out. I have people sometimes, they would do this to me. They would say stuff like, I worked with singles for a long time. They said, being faithful to God, trusting God, believing God, but if the big test ever comes along, I tell God all the time, don't worry, I'll be there. Let me go ahead and tell you, not going to happen. You're never going to get to the big test. You wouldn't be faithful anyway. because you didn't go through the lessons. No one just shows up and says, I need a graduate degree from Harvard, didn't go to college, didn't get a master's, didn't get an undergraduate, didn't go to high school, didn't go to junior high, didn't go to grammar school. But the big test, you know, I can pass the big test. No one gets to take the test, right? Because they say, you didn't pay your dues. You didn't learn all the things you were supposed to learn before. You didn't go through life's lessons to get to this point. You don't get to take the test. I know you're looking at this and say, I don't know if I want to take the test. You know, that's a difficult thing for Abraham to go through. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Abraham's not known because of his knowledge. He's not known because of his understanding. Abraham's known because he acted in a wise way, not a foolish way. He acted in a faithful way to God. He trusted and he believed God. And responding to that test of our faith is how God wants to use us. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you do take us through tests in life. You take us through tests because you have things that you want us to learn, things that you want us to know. Places that you want us to go. There are adventures that we could never imagine, that could never understand. And you take us through a life of preparation. We fail many times. We fail to do the things we're supposed to do, only to be shaken again and called to wake up, to learn, to move forward. That because you are with us and because you are the one who points the way, who prepares the way, the one who sees what we could not see, because you're with us, we can pass the test. We can move forward. If you're here this morning and you've never put your hope and your trust that there is a God who loves you, created you, who gave you life, and who wants to rescue you, redeem you, so that your life would amount to something. As we pray right now, I encourage you to believe in His Son, Jesus Christ. Because God sends His Son to give His life in our place, in our stead, instead of us, so that we could know Him. So we could be His sons and His daughters, so that we could grow up in our faith, so that we could face the great test of life, trusting and believing in Him, and pass those tests because of His great love. You never opened up your heart to Jesus before. God sent Him so that you could know Him, so that you could live a life far beyond the life that you could imagine, so that you could see things that you never saw before, you couldn't see before. Say, Jesus, I believe you. I believe you came and you gave your life for me. That you lived a perfect life so that you could sacrifice it as an offering to take my place, to pay my debt, so that I could now be the man or the woman that God my Father created me to be. In Jesus' name we pray.